Hello, rock and roll rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. We are back on the track of discussing the tracks by the one and only Paul Rodgers, and this time we're taking a look at his work with Free. But not just all the work with Free, because there's a lot to work off of there. But specifically the two albums prior to Fire and Water, which birthed their mega hit All Right Now. So this is the Free Barn episode. Barn being an acronym for Before All Right Now. So we'll discuss the first two albums and a bit of the backstory on the band. So Free was founded in London, but not all the band members were Londoners. They sort of formed from a couple other bands. Paul Rodgers had actually been in the process of coming down to London with his band called the Roadrunners that got renamed Wildflowers, or The Wildflowers, and would feature future members of both Elvis Costello's Attractions and Whitesnake. Small little side note on Paul Rodgers' career here in relation to Whitesnake, which is that before taking on David Coverdale, Ritchie Blackmore had been trying his darndest to get Paul Rodgers to come in as the new vocalist for Deep Purple. So, Paul Rodgers turning that job down gave Coverdale a job, and then Coverdale formed Whitesnake, which would eventually have one of Paul Rodgers' former Roadrunners bandmates in it. So, it's a small world in the musical world, especially on a small island like England. But, here we are, continuing along. So, Paul goes to London. The rest of the Roadrunners kind of fell by the roadside, but he trucks down there, ends up in a band called Brown Sugar, but he also ends up jamming with Kossoff, Paul Kossoff, who is in a band called Black Cat Bones with Simon Kirk. So, that's 3 out of 4. And then, when it comes to finding a bass player, Alexis Corner, who was like big on the London music scene, sort of advises them to pursue Andy Fraser. Andy Fraser, at this point, is only about 15 years old. He's not quite 16, or he's just turned 16. And he has already played in John Mayall's Blues Breakers. If you're not super up on your obscure British acts, John Mayall's Blues Breakers is sort of the band that also launched Eric Clapton. Which, fun Clapton factoid, is that Paul Kossoff, of formerly Black Cat Bones, now Free in this timeline, is who Clapton asked for advice on his tremolo technique. So, the guitar god himself was consulting Paul Kossoff, who is unfortunately overlooked in the discussion of great guitar players, because he's a phenomenal guitar player, as you will know if you've listened to any Free songs aside from All Right Now. Not that the guitar on All Right Now is bad. It has a very catchy riff to it, but it is far from the best example of Paul Kossoff's guitar playing. So, digging into examples of guitar playing, now that you've got a bit of a backstory on the band, Free's first album, which came out in 1969, was called Tons of Sobs. And it was produced, little side note over here, because I'm the self-proclaimed punk princess, but it was produced by Guy Stevens, who, amongst other things, Guy Stevens would later in his career go on to produce London Calling by The Clash. So had to throw in that little side note there on Mr. Stevens' career. But for now, he is producing Tons of Sobs for Free, which is their debut album. It starts out with a part one of a two-part track. The other part is the footnote, so in a way it almost feels like a concept album. That's the only similarity, but I mentally associate albums that begin and end with, like, two parts of the same track as kind of like a concept album thing. It's not in this case, but I think of it in that way. So, Over the Green Hills kicks off the album, and then Worry is the second track, which is really kind of an ominous, brooding track, which Free does a lot of those. In a way, they're almost like the proto-emo rock band, but very bluesy. Like, they're more blues-based, but it's their lyrics are some of the most uniquely sinister lyrics in rock. Like, they're really menacing, like up there with Jethro Tull, kind of, spooky. But the track that I'm gonna break down the most, because I'm not breaking down every track on both their first two albums. That would take a couple episodes in of itself. But there's some highlight tracks that I think really exemplify a lot of what the band did well. So the third track on Tons of Sobs, which is called Walk in My Shadow, was Paul Rodgers' first song that he ever wrote. So that's cool. And it's just a mean blues kind of song. While Paul Rodgers did write it, it is attributed on the credits to the entire band. And I think that may have something to do with, like, they helped him flesh it out and fine-tune it. But it's his first thing. He went and composed it on his bass guitar. And he, kind of got hooked on the idea of being able to make a song by just, having a melody and putting some words to it. And ta-da, you're a songwriter. In fact, it kind of astonished him when they got signed that he was like, his contract said, like, Paul Rodgers, songwriter. And he's like, what? I'm a singer in a rock and roll band. And they're like, no, you write songs. Like, that's what you're getting paid for. Part of this is your songwriting, so you get songwriting credits. And he's like, oh, I hadn't really thought of myself as a songwriter before. But Walk in My Shadow by Paul Rodgers would be a piece in his lovely mosaic of songwriting, the very first piece. And it's just got a gritty, bluesy feel to it. It's a really true quintessential blues kind of piece. I mean, obviously it's not like true American, blues by the black bluesmen, but for a bunch of white British guys, they're doing a really good job of the blues. You'd almost expect somebody like Howlin' Wolf to be performing a song like this, not a bunch of teenage British guys. But, and the guitar solo is just, it's mean and dirty and gritty and bluesy. It's one of those lovely examples of the British blues invasion bastardizing the real blues, but in like the best way ever. I love British blues rock. I mean, I love blues rock in general, but like the Brits just got a hold of the American blues and did wonders with it, which fortunately ended up launching kind of renewed careers for some of the artists they were covering as people began to realize that these artists were not original to the style of music. And Paul's vocals, of course, are pure blues. The next track is called Wild Indian Woman, which is kind of fun. It's got a lot of kind of double entendres in it. It's just kind of a amusing little piece. And track 5 is called Going Down Slow, which is a cover of an old blues standard, which there's another slightly more famous cover of an old blues standard we'll get to later. But the next track on the album, which was written by Andy Fraser and Paul Rodgers, who would go on to compose the better chunk of Free's songs, is called I'm a Mover. And it's another blues song. This whole album is really blues songs. And on this one, you can really get a feel for how influenced by Jimi Hendrix Paul Rodgers was. Like, Paul Rodgers isn't just your average fan of Jimi Hendrix. Most people are like, yeah, Jimi Hendrix is one of the greatest guitar players ever, and I really like this and this song. But, like, Paul Rodgers appreciates Hendrix on a level that most people don't, as in that he has named Hendrix as, like, his favorite songwriter, which is not the first thing people think of when they think of Hendrix. Also, when you're listening to this track, you can get a real feel for the influence of Hendrix's vocal style on Paul Rodgers here. The melody of the song sort of has this lope driven by Fraser's bass, and the blues hollers, while like most of the singing is reminiscent of Hendrix, the sort of almost holler type singing that Paul Rodgers does at certain points in the song feels a little bit like, James Brown or Howlin' Wolf. So he's just channeling all the great, black R&B singers and performers perfectly on this original track by him and Fraser, and it's just lights out awesome. Speaking of blues songs, the ubiquitous The Hunter, which was originally done by Albert King, is the next track on this album. The Hunter is all over the place. Any band that was covering blues songs ended up sampling from this song a little bit. Like, one of the more notable examples is Led Zeppelin samples it in How Many More Times. But I have to say, Free's version of The Hunter is not just one of the best versions of this widely covered song, it's possibly one of the best British Blues Invasion covers of any original, like, blues work, you know, like by the old American bluesmen. Like, I would put it for that ascent of the blues, which is conviction. It is more convincing in that area by far than like anything Cream did. Not knocking Crossroads or Spoonful, but it's got more of that bluesy conviction. Like, I'm sorry, as great of vocalists as Clapton and Bruce are, they can't sing the same way Paul Rodgers can. Paul Rodgers is called the voice for a reason. There is a reason people consider him the best white blues singer of all time. The only people I can think of who come close to him would be Steve Marriott of the Small Faces and Humble Pie and Rory Gallagher of Taste and Rory Gallagher. So, like, he stands on an island by himself as far as the ability to sing the blues songs with conviction, and that is something that has been associated with him long before he did the Muddy Water Blues album, which proved that he could still do it, even like 25 years after Free. The Muddy Water Blues album may end up with an episode of its own because it's a knockout album. But staying here with Free, I'm pretty sure it's like the first two Free albums that, and maybe the third one too, really all of his work with Free that established Paul Rodgers to have that reputation as being the best white blues singer. 'Cause he is. Everybody from Joe Elliott of Def Leppard to Jeff Beck to Robert Plant acknowledges, to Ritchie Blackmore even, acknowledges that Paul Rodgers is one of the greatest vocalists of all time. Freddie Mercury and the rest of Queen felt that way. Hence why he was the first person they asked to fill the vacant mic stand after Freddie's passing. Like, the man has a reputation in the music industry, or at least amongst other musicians, that seems like the rest of the public is not aware of, that he's that good, and everybody who knows anything about music thinks he's that good. So, Paul Rodgers is amazing, and his work with Free is like the groundwork. You know, it's the basis for everybody's high opinion of him. And then, you know, as he does other stuff in his career and became more widely known, that grew as well. But Free was the bedrock of this sterling reputation for phenomenal vocals that Paul Rodgers has. So, now that we've moved on from my little snippet there as to why Paul Rodgers deserves an entire month of episodes dedicated to him, like I'm doing, the eighth track on Tons of Sobs is called Moonshine, and it's songs like Moonshine that explain why the album is called Tons of Sobs. Because Moonshine may just be one of the most depressing, dismal, gloomy, spooky songs ever written. Like, it's the original emo song. Like, you go lift the lyrics, put them to a, like, more punk-based rhythm, and voila, you have a gloomy emo kid song that would fit right in with, you know, Simple Plan or Fall Out Boy or Green Day. Like, it's super down. I mean, the dude's sitting by his tombstone. It's a very down, depressing song. But the beautiful part of this song is that Kossoff's guitar just underscores the lyrics perfectly, you know, and then when it breaks into the agony of Paul, with Paul singing the very anguished vocals, the rise and fall is like carried with by the guitar equally by the vocal singing. So it rises and falls of like depression and mourning to like torment and wailing, and while Paul Rodgers is wailing on vocals, Paul Kossoff is wailing on guitars, and while the other one's sort of mournfully plodding vocally, the guitar is mournfully plodding, you know, musically. It might even be some of Kossoff's best guitar on the whole album. It's not so much that it's like super flashy, it just fits with the song better than any of, not for sure, but like it could definitely contend to be better than any of the other examples on this album. It's a really good, just fits in the song perfectly, from the subtle beginning to the almost psychedelic styles and the peaks of desperation in the song, and then the epic solo. The solo is hands down amazing. I love the solo in this song. It's really, really good. It's like on a, it's an 11 out of 10 on my rating as guitar solos go. And if y'all haven't caught on, I'm a big fan of guitar solos. Hence why the guitarist is my favorite band member, like, half the time. Because I'm like, guitar solos are life! And, the final track on the album is written exclusively by Paul Rodgers. Moonshine was written by the whole band. I guess everybody had a state of the blues at the time, because it's a depressing song. But Sweet Tooth is the complete opposite, as the title suggests. While it's still a blues song, the lyrics are fun and flirty and just sweet and kind of almost a little goofy, and the song's just really groovy, and it's a really cool song. It's even got some accents of piano in it, and the guitar, while a little less flashy than on other songs, is still really good. Like, Paul Kossoff is a completely underrated guitar player, and I don't know why he doesn't get talked about more. But then I could say the same thing about Rory Gallagher, Alvin Lee, or, you know, honestly, Stevie Ray Vaughan doesn't get talked about enough either, and he gets talked about more than the other three I just mentioned. Okay, there is another track that, while not on the album, was a unreleased outtake off of Tons of Sobs, and it's called Visions of Hell, because that's a totally uplifting title to name your song, but it, while being a really gloomy song, and it being another example of Andy Fraser and Paul Rodgers is writing together, it's subtle accents of guitar by Kossoff that just enhance the somber feeling of the song, and the chaotic organ break just make it a really interesting song. So, like, it's well worth checking out, even though it didn't make the album. Just be prepared, it's possibly even more depressing and morose than Moonshine is. I don't know what these guys were doing going through. Maybe just the English wintertime and lack of sunshine was getting to them. But they weren't. Nobody could be in a very good mental place and writing songs like this. But moving on to their second album, which was just titled Free, it has a very iconic album cover. It was actually made it into the top 100 album covers of all time, which was a book, not just like a article by Rolling Stone or anything. Really interesting how it was designed, and just take a look at it. It's really artistic and original and well worth checking out. I obviously can't show you because this is a podcast, but just Google Free. That is a problem with this band. I'm here to tell you, Googling things like Free albums does not render you results about the band most times, and it's very frustrating. So, best thing to do would be to go Google Tons of Sobs by Free, open the Wikipedia article, and then follow the link to the next album, which is titled Free, and then look at the album cover there. Or possibly Google, like, Free album cover by Ron Raffaele, I believe was the guy's last name. I mean, the guy's name, I'm pretty sure his last name was Raffaele, and I think his first name was Ron. So just Google it that way, because it's really worth checking out. It's a very cool album cover, even if the album that it was on wasn't as cool as it is. And Free by Free is a pretty dang cool album. It jumps open with a cool kind of shuffling song called "I'll Be Creepin'," which is it's a fun song. I like it. I'm not going to discuss it as at length here. However, the second track, "Songs of Yesterday," is it's a fun like it's not funny in a fun way, but I love the sort of sense of humor in the song. Because we can all relate to it. We all either know the person or have been the person who finds it necessary to kind of like start their day at work by complaining about their job, and then like they get through it and they don't really hate it that much. It's kind of like that song. This is the song for the people who hate their job, but not like entirely. Like, that's not the worst. They just have to complain in order to get their day kick-started. That lyrically, that's sort of where it goes, but musically, it's like a shuffling tune with very bass-driven to the shuffle part. And it's still very bluesy and in the vein of Tons of Sobs still. However, the third song on this album is completely out of that vein. It's closer to the Over the Green Hills Part 1 and Part 2 from Tons of Sobs. The opening and closing fade outs, but it's not even like that. It's still different. It's called Lion in the Sunshine, and it may be like the chillest, chill, mellow tune ever. Like, if Moonshine and Visions of Hell are like the most depressing songs ever, then Lion in the Sunshine and a song we'll get to later on this album called Mouthful of Grass are like the chillest, zen, stoned on a giant bag of weed, not that I've ever done that, but I can imagine it. I know people, kind of song. Like, just super mellow, totally mellow tune. Lion in the Sunshine is just definition mellow. And the music perfectly evokes the mood of the lyrics, which are, the lyrics are very much about being mellow. You know, the same way that, like, in their songs like Visions of Hell, the guitar work and melody evokes the depressing desperation of the character. In this case, for a change, they're evoking happy feelings, and it's just tranquil and placid and chill as heck. And there's some kind of interesting contributions on bass by Frazier. Like, it's not a very, it's not a heavy rock song, so you're not gonna get all these heavy elements, but if you listen for the bass, it's pretty cool. Frazier was a very unique bass player. He just has a completely unique sound, which isn't, often a thing you think of as bass players in rock bands. Normally, their job is just to sort of layer in there and not be anything particularly special. And to me, Frazier is up there with John Paul Jones, if not possibly even more unique of a bass style. It's very his own thing. He's truly a virtuoso on the instrument. Not in any wild, crazy Jaco Pastorius way, but definitely in a groove. And it has this sort of almost like rubber band type bounce to it in some songs. So Frazier's bass is one of many reasons to check out Free. But the song, Lion in the Sunshine, Frazier's not the only one doing interesting things. Kossoff manages to make guitar string squeaks sound pleasant in a way that has only been rivaled by the Beatles' Blackbird. Like, some people can make a guitar string squeaking sound like it part is part of the song, which is good when they do. Other times I'm like, it doesn't sound that cool when I do it. It sounds like I don't know how to play guitar. Somehow these people do it, and it sounds like they did it on purpose, and it sounds, elegant. But the song's overall vibe kind of feels like if a rock band, who was quite possibly very stoned and mellow, decided that they were going to do their interpretation of Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. This is like the rock version of Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun by Debussy. Just super chill, mellow, sunny afternoon, warm, glowing vibes. Just really great. Which the classical influence isn't too far off base because Kossoff was taught classical style guitar And actually, when he was first getting to know the guys that would be members of Free, he was able to like show off like skills at flamenco, which is not an easy style of guitar playing to master. And they're like, "Oh wow." And he's like, "Nah, forget that. Let's play the blues. Like, yeah, it's cool that I can do this, but that's not what I want to play. I want to play the blues." Which they definitely did on Trouble in Double Time, which would be the fourth track. But more closely related is the fifth track, Mouthful of Grass, which is another very chill, classically influenced kind of piece. Mouthful of Grass is almost like meditative. It's just very mellow. However, Trouble in Double Time, the track between Lion and the Sunshine and Mouthful of Grass, is a banger. I love it. It's the only song on the album that was written by all the band members rather than just Rodgers and Frazier. And the song starts out kind of with this unapologetic rake who's just very proud of the fact that he's double-timing a bunch of girls. Literally starts out with a self-admission of being a bad boy. Like, this guy is not making it on Santa's nice list this year or anytime soon. He's far more likely to get stabbed with a kitchen knife by one of these chicks who finally decides to get jealous. But that sort of leads into the conclusion, because like musically, the song carries this sort of mood where at first it's kind of like confident and boastful, but like there's a slowdown at the end where it almost seems to musically suggest that he is reconsidering the sustainability of, loving every woman he comes along with and not potentially getting murdered for that, because that happens a decent amount. And sort of considering the trouble that having this many girlfriends leads to, something that earlier in the lyrics it references that his teacher in school warned him about having more than one woman in your life. Speaking of women, track number six is literally just entitled Woman. Another Paul Rodgers and Andy Fraser song, same as everything on Tons of Saw, I mean everything on Free, the second album, is, except for Trouble in Double Time. And Woman is one of my favorite songs by Free entirely, like in their whole discography. I love Woman. It's a fun song. It Frazier and Rodgers tiptoe that line that I like to talk about Springsteen tiptoeing, where like they're just, they've got a toe on each side of being like too sexy to the point that it's crass and not sexy anymore, and like just sweet and innocent. Like it's, one foot's on the innocent side and one foot's on the sexy side lyrically, and it just balances perfectly. It's one of the things I love about the song, and love about a lot of Springsteen songs, as I've discussed in all those episodes I've done on Bruce. But Paul's voice in this song is just all R&B. He's like channeling Little Richard, James Brown, and even a bit of Ray Charles. Like he's going for gold on the R&B vocal influences, and it's stunning. Also, this song possesses possibly my second favorite proposal in any song, because there is a part of the song where he's proposing marriage, but this dude wisely, or maybe not so wisely, has a prenup, as in that she can have anything of his except for his car and his guitar, which, as prenuptials go, that seems a pretty fair thing to not want to share. You can't have my car and you can't have my guitar. So that sounds like a typical dude. Like, that part just kind of chuckles, makes me chuckle. I say second best proposal in song, that the first best is, I Wanna Marry You by Bruce Springsteen. But that's an episode for another time, because I could probably do a whole episode just on that song. I love that song so much. Anyways, moving on from there is the seventh track on the album, which is called Free Me, which is not near as empowering and joyful as the title would suggest. It is the gloomiest album track since Moonshine on Tons of Sobs. The eighth track is Broad Daylight, which has a lot of really good lyrical imagery, and it's a kind of fun song. Like, melodically, it fits a title like Free Me more than the melody for Free Me does, but that's an issue for another time. Like, once you listen to the songs, you understand why they're called what they are and why they're arranged, you know, musically the way that they are. But just looking at them musically and title-wise, it seems a better match the other way around. However, the ninth track, which is another one of my favorite tracks, is Morning, Sad Morning. And it's got some classical influence to it as well, same as Lion in the Sunshine and Mouthful of Grass did. And it's even got so much classical influence to the point that it has flute on it, which is, you know, kind of original and rock outside of the Moody Blues and Jethro Tull. It's only on this track, and the flute is provided by none other than future founding member of Traffic, Chris Wood. So Chris Wood is on the woodwinds, and it is, unlike the other kind of slower, somber numbers, the lead character in the lyrics is actually kind of healthily managing his grief. Like, he misses his girl and, you know, hopes that she's thinking of him and all the fun that they had, kind of thing, in a thoughtful, sad kind of way, but he's not sitting by his tombstone waiting for the dawn and wishing he was dead and all the other horribly depressing things that go on in Free Me and Visions of Hell and Moonshine. This guy's healthily managing his grief. So, growth. Speaking of growth, growth as musicians occurred in the fact that after their second album, Free, you know, they'd been touring before their first album even, so they had, like, you know, their set groove down, but, and they had pretty much gotten it where they were only doing original songs in concert, except for the audience would not let them off the stage if they did not play this one particular cover, which would be their version of Albert King's The Hunter. Hence why I said it, well, not the main reason, but a contributing evidence to why I said it isn't just one of the best covers of that song, it's one of the best blues rock covers of a, you know, American blues song, period. You know, it's one of the best British Blues Invasion covers of a, you know, older blues song from America. And the audiences at these concerts seem to agree. You can go on Spotify and probably on YouTube too and look up, I want to say it's the performance at Sunderland. I cannot remember which year. Brain wants to say like 71, but that could be wrong. It's knockout because, like, you just, like, you hear the endless applause. Like, this song made the audiences so happy. But the reason I'm saying this at the end rather than back when I was discussing The Hunter is that they had decided, seeing as the song was so ever-lovingly popular with their audience, that they would make an attempt to write something as catchy and appealing as The Hunter was. So, sort of like, Free writes their own The Hunter. Not necessarily based off of it in any way musically, but just, you know, wanting to have a song that had similar energy and, you know, broad-based appeal like The Hunter did. So, that song would be the song that catapulted them to their high-climbing success because their answer to The Hunter was All Right Now, which would appear on their third album, Fire and Water, which is a great album, and honestly, I prefer the title track to the ubiquitous All Right Now. Not that I don't enjoy All Right Now and turn it up every time I hear it on the radio, but it's far from the best track by Free, and for me, Fire and Water is the best track off of Fire and Water, you know, even more so than All Right Now. It's far more lyrically complex than All Right Now, put it that way at least, or at least more lyrically engaging. But regardless, All Right Now is an anthem and a legendary piece, and hopefully through it, people have learned to discover more about the band, kind of like I did. You know, where you look into the history of a one-hit wonder band, quote, so to speak, and find out all the other things that they did that weren't as big of hits, but were equally, if not more, musically valuable. So, hopefully, this episode inspires you to check out some more obscure free, if you haven't already. And one final song recommendation, which was a bonus track off of their second album, is called The Worm. And it's just funky and fun and groovy, and it's well worth checking out just for the total original, you know, funkiness of it. And Paul Rodgers' blasting vocals, because, you know, as we mentioned earlier, he is widely and rightfully considered one of the best vocalists in the genre of rock, and quite possibly just as vocalists go across the board. Anyways, just, he's the voice, and he's the voice for a reason. So, I'm going to give my voice a rest, and y'all have a great week. Be kind to each other, and rock on, and I will be back next week with more musical history, commentary, and content. Catch you next time.